So it ended up being 3 months before the third doctor found it, where I was up in Newcastle in pre-season training. We did some contacts, and I literally had the little slightest knock on it.
Yeah.
And it was aching for a good hour or two, and it swollen up quite a lot. And once I went to the club doctor then, it was very quick. He knew someone in the NHS in this on the oncology department who just put me through. And literally 2 days later, I was having surgery.
Johnny Williams, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Bring that a little bit closer.
Yeah.
Mate, before we start, I spoke to my mum after you asked for some Welsh cakes.
Yeah.
I know you've tried one earlier. What are your thoughts on these bad boys? Do you want to give a little video footage of the quality?
Shall I? Yeah, shall I? This is like an advert now. For your mum, yeah. Honestly, Pettigrew in Cardiff is good, and that gives it a run for its money. I would buy them any day of the week. I actually would. They're lovely.
Yeah, mate. She's
now I've had a bite. I've got to finish that whole lot. But
yeah, mate. I'm gonna have a bite of one of these. Yeah. They ain't gonna make it home to your house.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for jumping on.
Thanks for having me, mate.
I've known you a while now. I'm sick of you.
I know we've been working together best part of a year and a bit.
Yeah.
Again, like work so much. The calls we've had have been amazing and brilliant, and I love working with you, mate. So yeah, it's an honour for you to finally invite me on the podcast.
Well, I was a bit, I was not unsure for a while, but I was like, wanted to keep the line between profession and this other side. But to be fair, you know, it's been amazing working with you. Originally got in touch with you from our mate Jake, who's over there. I think we'll have to do an episode with him. But you know, ever since we started working together, mate, like you've just gone from strength to strength. Like, I think we reached out originally, you had your calf injury, right?
Yeah. So a bit of background on that. Like, I reached out to you through here and through Jake. Because of that injury, I was in a bit of a dark place and felt like I needed some more help and guidance, like off field, as well as from what you offer on field as well. Mm. Sort of like habits and mindset point of view. Which I just needed guidance on from a personal point of view on that. And like the evolution from where I've gone professionally and taking it on to the on-field stuff and from the background stuff, I've come a long way. Like with, like I said about those habits, pro habits, taking them on, whether it be like C-dips, meditation, journaling, that really, really helped from a day-to-day point of view. Mm.
I was actually speaking to your partner yesterday, and she says how you go to bed at night doing your gratitudes.
Yeah,
I was like, mate, fair play to him. He sticks to them. I'm grateful for that, man.
Yeah, we made that little habit. Like, again, just before you go to bed, 3 things you're grateful for.
Nice.
Just roll into it. And it's actually the conversations that just come from that. Spider. And straight away, the way you're thinking is from, it might be negative or it might be neutral, but positive. Mm. 3 things I've done today. Oh, I've had a really good day, actually. Just straight away, little things and little differences like that go a long way.
I appreciate that, man. It means a lot, and I'm glad it's working on you. But it's basically you've done the work. Everything we've done together, you've done the work. I've just kind of added some extra, like added some stories or benefits from things. But I actually want to bring it all the way back for a minute. So you're obviously born in England, in Reading, right?
Yep.
And so where's the Welsh come from, the background?
Yeah, so my dad is Welsh from North Wales, a Gog is what he likes to be called or doesn't like to be called, or whatever. So, so that's my Welsh background. He's Welsh speaking, like really proud Welshman. So that was pretty infectious early doors. He's a big rugby man, loves his sport, loves his rugby. So from an early age, he had a debenture in Cardiff, Principality Stadium. And was taking me to the games ever since I can remember, really. I think my first Wales international might have been from age of 6 years old, probably even five years old. So ever since I can remember, I remember wanting to be on the pitch.
Mm.
And that was obviously playing for Wales. So yeah, that's my Welsh background. It was very infectious.
Yeah.
From an early age.
And your dad, if I get it right, you've mentioned he's a Welsh speaking, Welsh spoken, yeah?
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing, because there's probably majority of the players who play for Wales, not everyone in that team, I'd say over 50% probably couldn't speak any form of, you know, even myself brought up in school, we only had one lesson a week on Welsh. Like, unless you wanted to pursue it, you could, but not many people probably did. But I wish I did actually go to school and add, you know, give more value to learning the language and things like that. But yeah, man, for that, it's pretty amazing on your aspect with the dad. But if I asked you then, you know, going from Reading, coming up the ranks then, straight into, was that London Irish Academy you started with?
Yeah, so my background was that I was playing rugby at Reading Ensigns Rams, which is a local rugby team. And then progressed through there. And once I got to sort of the age of 13, then it starts to become, right, okay, can you make it to county level? Mm. So that ended up, my county was Berkshire. And then even within that, there's sort of certain tiers. There was something called the School of Rugby, which is out of all the teams in Berkshire, you then, obviously the best players got picked to play for Berkshire. But within that, there was School of Rugby, where they picked the best 13 players.
Yeah.
And I remember that being a goal straight away from under 13. For the start of that year, I knew that was a specific goal. Mm. Obviously making county, but SOR was called School of Rugby. And I remember making the selection for that. And it was at that age, it was kind of elitist. It was like you had the county training, then you had the school of SOR, the School of Rugby, that trained over here. Wow. And I just remember being so happy, grateful, and like honoured that I was part of that. And I remember thinking, like, I felt sorry for the other boys, even though they'd made it into county. Into Berkshire, that they had to go train with the other boys, and I just felt part of this elite 13 from a young age. So that was the first sort of target for me, which I managed to tick off. And then from there, the London Irish sort of catchment is Berkshire, Surrey, can't remember, there's a few other counties. Mm. So straight away went into London Irish trials from there, so ended up making it into London Irish Academy from the age of 14. First game against Saracens. So that was quite smooth sailing, really, from a young age, and that's how it went. So sort of Reading Ensigns, okay, Berkshire, SOR, London Irish, and then going through there up to the academy up to 18, and progressing into the first team.
Wow, that's a good journey. And well, I don't know how smooth it was. Was it always like, you know, there was this like pathway to London Irish where like were you like touted at a young age like he's gonna make it, or was it like, no, I was always like battling against something all the time? Or
without sounding arrogant, like I was playing quite well from a young age. I knew I was playing quite well, but it was always like, okay, now that this is the next stage, everyone's like on that level, you know, so can I now prove at this level? Even again, like that sort of 12, 13 years old, always pushing. Okay, I know I'm good when I play for Reading Ensigns or county. How far can I go? And so that's why I just wanted to keep pushing the boundaries on how far I could go. So it was quite smooth sailing up to London Irish at sort of 14. And then as I sort of got older, the challenges started kicking in. So under 16s, I didn't make England schoolboys. I ended up playing Wales schoolboys.
That's right.
But I wasn't picked initially. I was picked through injury, so I got called up late. But I remember that was my first sort of like no, if you like, in the rugby world. And it really, really hurt. But I'm glad it wasn't just smooth sailing my whole career. Like, I think you need that to drive you, and making sure you keep working hard at that sort of age as well. It's really important, not just to like find it smooth sailing, because the lessons that I learned from that aren't the best. And I know I can actually think of a few boys who, at that age, sort of 16, had it really, really easy and smooth sailing. And they, once they've gone into pro, they haven't made the jump. Mm. So I'm glad I had to know, and then I had to keep working harder to get it. And it made me question, do I really want to be a rugby player? And I did. So I kept pushing and kept working on my game. And yeah, I think looking back now, I needed that.
It's interesting, right? Because I think we all need that form of a challenge at a young age. Because how many players do you know, right, that should have made it, but they didn't because they like had no form of adversities growing up because they were like the kingpin.
Yeah.
And then they got to that stage where they had people on the same level of them and they like sunk because they never been challenged, right? So many people have come to my head that I'm like, wow, they should have made it, but they didn't make it. And I think it's valuable to have those moments, right? And like you just said, then getting that knockback from England and then getting into the Wales team due to an injury, like those right there for some people be like, oh, am I not good enough? Or, you know, you start questioning, are you not good enough to go even further? Because this is only an under 16s. So then obviously after that progressing through Wales in the under 16s and moving on, how old were you when you made your debut first team?
For London Irish, I was 18. I was just turned 18. I remember it quite clearly. It was against Agen in the Challenge Cup. I was probably when I signed my pro contract into the senior academy, I reckon I was sixth choice centre going in. London Irish that year started pretty badly, not playing too well. So I got my opportunity against Agen, which, you know, back then, they're a good side now, but back then they weren't so good. So I remember walking with one of my best mates, Theo Brophy-Clues, and the coach pulled him aside and said, look, Theo, you're going to be on the bench this weekend? And I remember being buzzing for him. I remember being like, wow, that's massive. Like, well done. And he turned to me and was like, Johnny, you're going to start?
Wow.
And I just was like blown away. Like, I was like, wow. Like, it came out of nowhere, so unexpected. Like, I really didn't even think I was going to play. And so, yeah, I got man of match, I think, scored.
Wow, played. First try man of
yeah,
match.
Yeah, yeah. It was team. Like, yeah, Adam Adeski, which is, wow. You know, in Reading, the big stadium. And it was yeah, I didn't really look back then. I ended up that year playing Prem debut in Twickenham in the Premiership doubleheader.
Wow.
Scored two tries in that game. We lost, but played well.
Nice.
And that's what I mean. I ended up being the regular then in my first year.
That's impressive. First year to get that.
Yeah.
Who was your partner in the centres?
It was Tikaratuma, Fijian centre my first year. But again, sometimes rotated with Fergus McCrone and Canadian guy called Kieran Hearn as well. So it was quite chops and chains.
Some good players there.
Yeah.
And who was the fly-off? I'm trying to think of the London Irish fly-off. I mean, it used to be this guy years ago called Geraghty, but he's...
Yeah. So he was there. He was pretty flair. He was a really good player.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was. So he was there. I think I remember him having a few injuries. Theo, actually. Mm. He's quite similar. He had a chance off a bench and ended up being the regular 10 in our first year. So I was 10, he was 12, and then probably... like first choice was probably Tikaratuma at 13.
That's pretty impressive, man, for you to get into the first team at that age and not just play one game, but actually cement a spot. And from that then, it's kind of all like the hype. How did you manage with the hype in the first year? Because there would have been a lot of attention on you. I bet your family were absolutely chuffed for you. And, you know, people talk then, right?
Yeah, there was never too much hype. I guess I got a little bit after, you know what it's like with the media and the young boy coming onto the scene and scoring man of match straight away. Oh, it's the next big thing. Yeah. Or he's like this player. I found that more once I had my first cap for Wales, whereas then being compared to Hadley Parks or Jamie Roberts, or he sits in between or all this stuff. I guess they always want to compare you to someone else, you know what I mean? Mm. But yeah, like again, from that sort of age, there wasn't too much hype.
Was it ever a player in the team that kind of took you under their wing at a young age? I think we always need someone who's kind of, you kind of look up to, they kind of just know they got your back when things might, they, you know, they, they'll do the tough work for you or anything like that? Or
the direct answer is no. Straight away, I'm thinking of Theo Brophy-Clues, who is my age. He's ahead of his years, really is.
Really?
Like, he's one of those guys who's figured out life and his habits and well-being. And
he's all over it?
He's all over it from a very young age. And I was the polar opposite, like, just a bit loose or always late or all that sort of stuff. Whereas he sort of pulled me under his wing, even though we came from the academy together. And
that's good, though.
Yeah. And so I just, like, again, these little things and who you surround yourself with are pretty infectious, and I needed that at that age to knuckle me down, be a bit more professional. Those sorts of off-field habits are pretty good. And he sussed it. He was really good at that. So I would say Theo, even though he wasn't older in the squad, we were the same age and done everything together. We lived together.
Where is he now?
He unfortunately had to retire because he had concussion.
Wow.
He had too many concussions. But luckily, he hadn't got to the point where he was forced to retire through symptoms.
Yeah.
He just had too many to the point where he might get symptoms.
He was aware of it enough to go.
Yeah, he retired on his own terms. But that's what I mean. He's ahead of the game.
Like, very educated and smart to have that awareness then.
Yeah.
People undervalue, right? I think, you know, we see people come on the scene, wingers, they develop, like, a winger will normally get a good opportunity pretty early, right? And when they, like, debut, and they normally die coming to the end of the career because they're not as fast. And forwards will develop later on, props and stuff. But I think the fly half position is like you have to be really high IQ, smart, educated. Yep. And it's not a position, like, you don't see many young fly halves, like, you know, 17, 18, that take the world by storm. They normally develop over time. Like, I think the best 10 takes 26, 27 to really feel comfortable with your voice in a team.
Like, yeah, that's a good point. Again, everyone's different. I find, like, even if you're shy, I find a lot of young boys now coming through are really, really shy and quite introverted. A fly half, you can't be. Similar with scrum half, you have to be speaking up, you have to be chirpy, you have to be bossing boys. And yeah, like, again, it's based on that position, where they have to be sort of forced out of them quite early.
Yeah.
And it's like anything, the more you do it, the more confident you get.
Yeah.
You know, those, like, again, I reckon a lot of these boys are shy or not very confident because they haven't really done it. Like, you know, they're the young guys coming into a senior rugby team where there's big personalities or senior boys.
Yeah.
And their perception is they're trying to knock them down or they're the alphas. And it's not like that.
No. You
know? Like, we had a meeting yesterday. I wasn't in the meeting, but a few of the boys at the club had a meeting yesterday about younger boys speaking up.
Yeah,
because these sort of 22, 23-year-olds, even younger, are playing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're not the future. And sometimes young players can be caught in that world of, I'm young, I'm the future, I'll get there.
It's okay to, yeah.
But you're the here and now. You need to develop a rugby personality.
100%.
You need to speak up. You need to boss standards. And not just for yourself, for other people, and lead by example. Mm. It's interesting you mention that.
It's smart, though, like, to be fair. It's funny when you're that age, it's as if you can kind of, it's okay to be quiet, it's okay to let the big boys talk, and it's okay. But if you're in those pivotal positions, you kind of got to use your voice. But I was actually going to ask you then, I watched you play against the Blues last weekend. It was probably one of the best games I've seen you play in a long, you've had a consistency of no injuries, and you're like, I don't know, that was one of the best games I've seen you play. When you come back from your calf injury against Munster, that was an unbelievable return. And there's been things that you've been working on personally in outside of rugby. But one of the things we spoke about recently was, like, finding your voice, realizing now what age you're at, and being like, you want to be a leader now, not just another player in the team, like, actually, you know, being more authentic yourself on the field. And that's something that you've really bide into recently, right?
Yeah, it is, yeah. There's always a better time to start. There's always, like, I will do that after I've settled down at Scarlett's. Like that was my reason for not speaking up too much. I don't want to come into a team too hot or think I'm a know-it-all, or you know, coming in too arrogant like that.
Yeah.
Or you know, I'm young. When I'm older, I'm gonna be like that. I'm gonna be more confident. It's not. Remember, there's a TikTok actually going around recently, and it's like.
But the coffee's in.
Yeah. Chuck is the origin.
Before we start, we've just got given a coffee. I just want to say as well, before we keep going, so this is Gavin Henson's pub, the Fox in St. Bride's, and they've just given us a nice coffee and some orange juice because he's had too many coffees. But it's a nice setup here, right?
Yeah, really done it. He's done it really well. Lovely pub, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll talk more about it later. I don't want to interrupt the chat, but you were just saying then more, you know, if not now, when? And yeah. You said you watched the TikTok.
Oh, yeah, it was a quote. It's like one day or day one.
Mm.
So that's the kind of vibe I'm speaking about. Like I was kind of in that one day attitude. And I just come back from the World Cup and you know, I'm 27. Day one.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of, I've got a lot of good things to say.
Mm.
So why am I biting my tongue?
Yeah.
And it was always like, I'm injured, I'm not playing, or I'm younger guy in the squad, there's more senior guys where it sound better coming from them. There's always an excuse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's always a better time. And I just got to the point where, it's now. Like, you know, I'm in my prime, 27 years old. Like, again, I had a good preseason. Why not? Yeah. If I got good things to say, say it. If I don't say it. Yeah. Don't overthink it, is kind of the point I'm saying. Like, yeah, but if I've got something to say, say it. And that's the point with the younger boys.
100%. Is even yourself, like you just said, it's really expressing yourself, though. Like, that, you're expressing yourself now, even on the weekend playing. The lines you were running, you felt you looked comfortable. You actually played outside centre, and I thought you looked really good in that position. Had more time on your hands with the ball defensively. You're strong against the two blue centres. And I suppose that's down to you coming to that stage of going like, well, there's no, like, it's as if you've ripped the band-aid of fear off.
Yeah.
Fear's gone now. You play just like you're playing. You're probably playing like you did when you were younger. We used to talk about back in Reading days.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I actually want to give a little shout out the fly half that was playing that day.
Yeah,
Johan
Lloyd. Yeah,
so he's gonna be biting the ankle soon of Sam Costello.
Yeah.
He's they're two freak players, both of them. So it's exciting times.
Yeah. Going back to your first point about ripping off the fear band-aid, that's kind of like in all walks of life. Like that's what I've just spoke about with speaking up, for example. You know, it might even be small, like you don't get your point across properly, or you mumble your words in front of everyone. It looks embarrassing. So that's kind of what I'm on about, and that's from a playing point of view as well. Oh, I'm scared of dropping the ball. I'm scared of getting smashed, or I'm scared of missing a tackle. I used to play with a lot of fear, driven by fear, to play well. Whereas that doesn't drive me anymore. I want to play well, and I back myself. So it's more from a confidence and an enjoyment point of view, which is driving me to get on the ball.
That's good.
And it's taken me a long time to get that.
Mm.
You know, I'd only say over the last year and a half, I've really been playing with little fear.
Yeah, nice.
I'd say it's consistently playing as well, week in, week out, because that fear sort of slips back in once I've come back from an injury but yeah, I know what works for me. Again, the word that we speak about on the chats is nonchalant. That's my favorite word.
Yeah,
that kind of sums me up, just kind of laid back and
yeah
just kind of in that cruise zone.
Mm.
I try and be in that in every aspect, really.
Good stuff. When we talk about nonchalant, we talk about a few things, and I think they're just their words for certain things. You know, having those little words, having those things you might write down that put you, they're just little reminders. If you're ever feeling this stressful or anxious feeling, you just look at it or remind yourself of it. And it just takes you to this other state. And like you just said, for over just over a year, you've been feeling in this place of like less fear playing. I actually want to bring you back, mate, like back to that Munster, before playing against Munster, that was the start of last season, right? Yeah?
Yeah.
You had a long injury of a calf injury, right? Which yeah. they couldn't find the answer to for a long time. And I think that was a frustration for you for massively, because it was never like an end date on when you were coming back. You didn't know what was going on. And then when things are out of our control, that's when like stress, overthinking, anxiousness will kick in, because there's no like form of, this is when I'm done.
Yeah.
So what did you do? Like we always talk about a lot of the time is, you know, what we can or what we can't control. And I want to ask you, because I think people need to know like the extent that someone will go through to figure out what they can do to improve their situation. So I'll let you run it from you, but you traveled a little bit. That's all I'll say.
That's what, sorry?
I said you traveled a little bit, as in you sourced out a lot of things on your own.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think with that injury, it wasn't my biggest injury I've had. I've had some nasty injuries. I've had hamstring surgery. I've dislocated my shoulder. And all this was a torn calf. But I really struggled to come back from it. And it was sort of the doubt and uncertainty, which was driving anxiety about coming back. Can I be the same player? Because I was playing pretty well at that point. But yeah, we ended up speaking about 2 months into that injury. Once I was like, okay, I'm feeling stressed, anxious, all these type of emotions. How can I really now get a package of on and off the field? Because I might be really good going to the club, and then I'd let myself down by having too many drinks on a weekend or whatever that was. Yeah. So really then focusing on my sports psychology mixed in with these different things. But yeah, it took me to a lot of places. I ended up going to Dublin to get some isokinetic testing, which is basically strength testing, and seeing what the issues were there. I managed to have the opportunity to go to Man City as well, see physios there and see what they were doing. And they get a lot of calf injuries, hamstring injuries in football as well. So having the opportunity to do that, was good and exciting, and again a little change of scene. By then it had been 3 months. I ended up in total being out for 5 months with a small, well, it wasn't a small, it was a grade 3 calf tear. Oh, wow. But it should never have been that long. I think I, looking back, needed that challenge to push myself in every aspect. Going out of these places, and I going to these places, which I went out of my way to do, having advice and guidance from yourself. And I think you only ever really push yourself when you have to really work hard for it. And I thought I'd cruise the injury. Oh, okay, got a calf tear. I'm going to be out for 6 weeks, and it ends up being 5 months.
Yes,
man. But you have to keep challenging yourself and keep pushing yourself and getting out of your comfort zone.
What was it like going to Man City? Like, I bet the setup there was unbelievable. I know we met up for a coffee in Manchester, but I mean, what was it like in the setup there?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, even driving in, massive gates, security's pretty locked on. I mean, it's world class. Lovely setup. Like, they've got everything they need there. Apparently the food is, I didn't actually have any food. I wish I did have some food though, because the sushi apparently is up there. Some of the best food in Manchester is for the players. They've got the top chefs. Wow. They've got like 5 or 6 top chefs, for example.
And they've got barbershops in there as well.
Yeah. So the change rooms are circular. And then like they've got this like hole in the roof. And yeah, like... stairs go up to it, to the players' lounge, where they got like PlayStation sofas, Formula One simulators, barber chair.
Yeah, yeah.
and then they can just throw a banner at each other through the fucking hole in the roof. Like, so
crazy that it's literally a house, like your own setup in the training, so you don't have to leave if you didn't.
Yeah, they got a spa, sauna, spa, ice bath, but really nice one. Yeah, the facilities and the setup there were really good, and I learned a lot from the physio, Tom O'Malley, that I've now taken to some of my rehab, calf prep, basically. So I learned a lot from my calf rehab and what I was doing there, but also just to see it and be in an environment. I met Jack Grealish as well.
Seen the photo.
Yeah.
So, what's he like?
Yeah, he seemed, yeah, sound, yeah. They had 3 days off, so he was on the lash. He loves the lash, like, yeah.
He loves a beard, doesn't he?
Yeah, so he's saying he's been on the booze for 3 days.
You're pretty diligent now, though, with, you know, your rehab and everything. You're always, if I ever speak to you, you're either sauna and you're ice bathing or you're doing something. You know, you're always big on drinking your water as well. Whenever I speak to you, you're always at David Lloyd's doing something down there, so... Is that something you've implemented since then, or do you think you've always been like that?
Again, I have days and weeks where I feel more motivated or inspired to do it than others. I think I always like doing it, but there have been points where I've been like, right, every day this week, I'm going to do that. And the amount of confidence you get from just doing it and how good you feel, just in 1 week of doing it, is it's crazy. So why not give yourself that self-love? Because it does transform onto the pitch and into your everyday life, you know? I mean, yeah, these are the kind of habits that we talk about, and it's about consistency. Because I find that's the hardest thing, if I'm, you know, being honest with you. I might be really good for a week, and then I'd switch off or can't be bothered to do it.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. So how the challenge is staying consistent and motivated for a consistent amount of time. Which is still the challenge, you know, Christmas coming up, temptations, drinking or whatever it is, you know.
I think it's like we talked about before, I think we spoke about it, you know, now you're at this stage, you want to become a leader or you want to become like, you want to find your voice. And I said to I like, you know, when you looked at players growing up with these ultimate professionals, I said, you know, is that where you want to be? And you were like, I don't think being that ultimate professional is actually what makes me the best player on the field. He's like, you said, like, you know, I do like having a beer, but I do like to make sure I'm training. I do like to make sure that I'm doing other things outside of that. He said, you know, for you to be the best player on the field, I think it's like taking that edge off now and then and realizing that where your happy medium is, instead of being someone that's, you know, I think we spoke before. I said, I love Johnny Wilkinson. You were like, yeah, but Johnny Wilkinson played his whole career with anxiety, of stress, of, you know, pulling his quad at training from kicking the ball so much. So it's like a fine line between being that ultimate professional and actually being the best version on the field.
Does that
make sense? So.
Yeah, I think what works for one person doesn't work for another. Like I've said, if I see someone doing loads of extras after training on the pitch, the perception is they're more professional than someone else, you know? Whereas for me, it's about staying fit and playing week in, week out and feeling good about myself and like going to the pool, the sauna and stuff like that. So doing my ice bath.
Yes.
So why doing loads of extras, staying on for half an hour, 45 minutes after the session?
Yeah.
Doesn't work for me. So you're not going to see me do that. If anything, I might be the first off the pitch to get in the ice bath or jump on the physio bed.
Yeah, nice.
Making sure I'm fit, because that's me knowing myself.
Yeah.
Knowing what works for me. So that's me being professional.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So being professional is what works for you rather than what works for someone else. So like, don't compare, just stay in your own lane.
I like that, mate. I like that a lot. And I think that's what it's all about. Even when we're working together, is actually just bringing the best version of you out. And it's weird. It's weird, like I was saying to Jake about this. I said, sometimes when you're on the field and you're playing well, I'm not even watching the game. I'm watching you. Like, I feel like you're a part of the, I'm a part of the piece of the puzzle, but essentially you're doing all the work. But it's just, you know, you build this bond with someone that you become a friend with them, not just a client and a coach, but I actually want to ask you a bit of a question. You know, you've played for England and you played for Wales. Not many people have done that before, if any. Is that right?
Yeah, well, a handful.
Probably. Handful, is it? Well, but they were they, because essentially, what year did you get called into the England team to play against the Barbarians?
2019.
And was you with London Irish then? Or
I was at Newcastle Falcons. Yeah.
And what was that experience like?
It was good.
Yeah.
Obviously, good's a bit of an understatement. Like, I've been wanting to play international rugby for a long, long time. Similar to what we were saying earlier, like, I felt like I was playing well. So I was quite impatient with international rugby. I always wanted to play international rugby. Yeah, it was a bit of a weird experience. Sorry, I don't know what to say here because...
Was Eddie Jones coach then?
He overlooked it.
Who was coaching then?
Jim Mallander.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
And the whole setup there, like, you know, I suppose obviously now you're playing for Wales and there's nothing wrong with either of those, I believe, you know, end of the day, if someone comes knocking on your door, you're not going to wait out for someone else to wait. Oh, I've got to wait out just in case, because if it was my case, I would wait. I would, you know, the first opportunity to play for, you know, the place you were born or your mother's side, it's an important thing. Do you know what I mean? So...
Yeah.
I think it's a bad, and I know you want to be careful how you say it, but it's still an achievement on its own to do that.
Well, one of the insurance brokers told me, right, that I come up in a question in a pub quiz the other day, in Virginia, actually. I can't remember the pub, I need to find it. But he was like, what player has scored both for England and Wales? I think that might have just been the only question. Sorry, I've not said that very well, but.
Yeah.
So the question was, what player has scored a try for both England and Wales? I can't remember in what time frame or whatever, but it ended up being me. And it was, we were all like.
Yeah.
That was typical, like, it happened to me. But yeah, I don't really know what to say on this.
You were pretty proud. I'd be pretty proud, man. I don't care what anyone says. You still represented a country that your heritage or you're born. I wouldn't be embarrassed at all. How did the opportunity come then to come over to Wales?
So I was out of contract in Newcastle. It was locked down. A lot of teams halted recruitment. So head coach of the Scarlets was a guy called Glenn Delaney, who was he was head of rugby at London Irish at the time, and he was sort of doing all the contracts. There was another coach called Richard Whiffin. He was again a London Irish coach, so was also working at Scarlets. They needed a centre. I think they lost Hadley Parks to Japan, and it just felt right and natural that it was. I knew the coaches there. I was Welsh qualified. Great team. Loved the way they played. It just felt like real. Like this is the moment. This is the opportunity in a dark time with COVID. Everywhere else had stopped recruitment apart from the Welsh regions, and yeah. Scarlets were one of the only teams looking for a centre. I knew the coaches, liked the way they played. I liked the Scarlets. Welsh qualified, ended up just working magically well.
Amazing. And you've probably gone to one of the most Welsh teams you could ever go to, as in the Scarlets.
West is best.
Mate, how did you find it there when you started training? Obviously, I don't think there's many English twangs down those ways, I don't think.
Yeah. It's one of those where I was more self-conscious of it than I thought, obviously with the Welsh-English hatred thing. So I was a little bit like self-conscious of it.
Yeah.
But not, in fact, they have been the most welcoming group when I first went, like really, really welcoming. More so than I thought. A lot better than, to be fair, the other clubs I'd been at.
Yeah, well. So how did the call-up to Wales come across?
First started playing at Scarlets and I hit the ground running, really. Straight out of lockdown, our first game was against Cardiff. That was a lot of our first games for, you know, five, six months. Yeah. Had a good pre-season, hit the ground running. And yeah, that after that first block was called in for the autumn internationals. didn't get the opportunity until Georgia. Played Georgia. Next week was England. And then, unfortunately, had a little calf strain in the team run against Italy, which was, I was devastated about, because that would have been my third cap.
Scored against the All Blacks, is that right?
Yeah, so that was the autumn after that.
After, okay.
After that, yeah. So, I've had a few strains, calf strains. I've been quite unlucky with injuries, dislocated shoulders, calf hammy. So that's kind of killed my momentum a little bit. Similar to what we were saying earlier, if you can sort of get that momentum and the consistency to perform, then there's no holding you back, really. Whereas I felt like I'd finally cracked it, got into the team, had my first caps and played really well in my second against England. And then I was going to go on a bit of a roll, whereas what actually ended up happening is tore my calf, then picked up a concussion against Ireland in the Six Nations, didn't play then. And then, do you know what I mean? It was constantly, okay, I've got niggles, concussions. That stops your momentum. You're giving someone else another shot. They play really well, and then that's their jersey, and then you've got to work hard again to get back in the team. And so, yeah, I'd say that's been my biggest challenge as selection with injuries and giving players a shot who've played really well and then therefore not being selected there.
I want to talk about one of your challenges, which we haven't mentioned, but I don't know if many people know about, but you actually had testicular cancer, is that right?
Yeah.
What year was that?
That was 2019. So weirdly enough, that was just after the England Barbars game. Oh, wow. I was technically playing for England with cancer, which is scary thought, because this is a very long story. But I had a hard testicle, which I found in the bath. Went to see three doctors about it. Two of them, the first two, said there was no issues, there's nothing wrong, no lumps or bumps. And so that settled the anxiety with that a lot. So it ended up being 3 months before the third doctor found it. Where I was up in Newcastle in pre-season training, we did some contacts, and I literally had the little slightest knock on it.
Yeah.
And it was aching for a good hour or two. And it swollen up quite a lot. And once I went to the club doctor then, it was very quick. He knew someone in the NHS in this on the oncology department who just put me through. And literally 2 days later, I was having surgery to remove it. Do you know what I mean? So I'd gone 3 months just sort of leaving it, being told by like normal NHS doctors that it's no lumps or bumps. And then as soon as I left it 3 months, it grew, potentially started to spread. That's when luckily it caught it. But I still needed to have chemotherapy because it spread into the lymph nodes just. Wow. I hadn't got there, but it started to spread. So they told me about the chances of it coming back. And if I didn't have chemo, there's 20. If I did, it was 5. So it made sense to go down that chemotherapy route. But if I caught that after a month, I wouldn't have needed chemo.
Pretty crazy, though, because two doctors turned you away saying it wasn't nothing. And then the third one, imagine, it could have been, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and the hardest part of the whole treatment is the chemotherapy. You know, like the one cycle, I only had to have one cycle. But the one cycle ended up being 4 days, 24 on a 24/7 drip. And then coming back then a week later for a half an hour blast. And then a week after that for another half an hour blast. Mm. And then just from that, even a month after the last treatment, you're still wiped from it.
Yeah, well.
So if I could have avoided that, you know, it would have just been the surgery and crack on, you'd be back playing. But with one bollock for six weeks, recover from surgery, small surgery like that, maybe even a month.
Wow.
Whereas I end up being out for about six. But But to come back from that, full stop.
That's massive to come back from it.
Yeah.
I don't think, well, from my perspective, I think that's a massive, you know, something to overcome like that. As in, even the confidence of worrying, you know, if I get knocked again or will I ever play again? These things come into mind when it's the state of, you know, cancer and stuff.
Yeah, I guess if you compare it, wow, it was the first sort of health challenge and it was a completely different challenge.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Becomes a matter of life or death, really, doesn't it? But I was lucky enough to catch it early, and the survival rate of testicular cancer is 99%. It's really, really high. So I wasn't too worried on that sort of thing. But again, having the sort of goal to come back to something was really important for me, which is obviously back returning and playing. Having a lot of support from family and friends was, again, you can't underestimate that either. And it was a tough time. Like, again, it was a really tough time. I had the support of the club. I had support, a lot of support, a lot of messages, a lot of love. It was a bit of a weird time. I was 22 at the time.
Yeah, young.
Yeah, really young. I look back then, it feels like a not like a dream, obviously, like a nightmare. It feels weird, like I've almost detached myself from it. Really.
Yeah.
I think because of the trauma that's come with it, it's a bit, it was scary.
Mm.
And, you know, anyone going through that is, it's hard, let alone a 22-year-old or, you know, who deserves to go through something like that. And that's what I found a lot of, like, why me?
Why me?
And you get caught up in that sort of that thinking. And it's hard not to.
Of course, man.
You know, like, I've never had anything like that before, like a professional athlete, diet's good, or all this sort of stuff. And then, boom, you get hit with this. And it's a bit like, so it's hard, really hard to take. A lot of questions that don't get answered, but you just have to stay on the path, stay on the goal, which is, you know, again, it's rugby or family.
Yeah, I think that's one thing we spoke about a lot as well, John, is like, you know, even all of the knocks you've had, even from our duration of working together, like, I've always said to you, man, like, everything that you've gone through has actually created the person you are today to play. Because if you didn't, I know there's some heavy hardships in there, but if you didn't have some of those hardships, like from a young age of 16 with Wales or England, and then to later on with hamstring, calf, shoulder, testicular cancer, they've all designed you to the person you are today. And like that creates that resilient mindset that not everyone can recognize until they've been through it. And like for you to perform the way that you do perform, even on the weekend or in the World Cup, or, you know, you return back from Scarlet after that long 5 months out against Munster, like you come off the bench as if you never missed a beat, you know? So that is all added up to the why you play the way you play now. And that's probably hard to take sometimes, that type of, for me to give that type of compliment to someone, because it's hard, you're just doing life.
Yeah, I think like what you said, going through all those challenges and adversities make you person you are today. Like I find going through that, like I wasn't really empathetic as a kid. I just have way more like social empathy for people, and just even if it's just that, I'm trying to think of other lessons off the top of my head, like, and there's loads, I promise you. But even if it's just that, like, you know what I mean, like there's so many, try and look at the pros that I've come through, even with something so horrifying like that is what I've gone through. Okay, what have I learned from this? Well, again, I know that I'm resilient. I know that I can overcome challenges, adversity, and I'm grateful. Like, I'm grateful for people I have around me, the support I have. Even if it's just that. Like, because you can take that for granted. what I did, what I do as a rugby player. It made me appreciate that. I love what I do. So yeah.
I remember when you said that then. What I want to ask you is, what advice would you give to someone who wants to become a professional player? What advice would you give to them?
Who am I talking to? A young kid?
Young kid who's aspirations of making it.
I would say, enjoy it. Don't put too much pressure on it. When I was younger, I played every sport going and just enjoyed my sport and took, without thinking about it, every skill set from every game I played.
Yeah, yeah.
And took it to rugby, and I just happened to excel in rugby. Mm. Whereas if kids from a young age desperately want to be a rugby player and they force all their eggs into one basket,
yeah,
there's very few who make it. But take the lessons from all the sport, even if it's just social, you know, because from a young age, few players make it. So try and enjoy your rugby, and if you excel in it, then go down that route. There are so many lessons, but when young kids come to me and ask, how can I make it as a rugby player? I would say, I played every sport. I played lacrosse. I was rubbish at lacrosse. But even still, hand-eye coordination. Even just the being a part of the team and the work, there's so many lessons from any sport you can take. Just go into it. If you excel, which I knew I did, at a certain age where I had to quit football, I then started to quit football at 16.
Yeah.
Then I channeled everything into rugby. Mm. But whereas I sometimes get questions from 9-year-olds about making it as a rugby player and being desperate to make it as a rugby player.
Yeah.
And I'm sometimes I'm careful what I say.
Yeah.
With that, I'm trying to teach them to enjoy their sport, every sport.
Yeah.
Because that's what I did, and that's what worked for me. And then because they might be rubbish at rugby, you know what I mean? But they're desperate to be a rugby player.
Desperate.
But just play every sport, because that'll make you a better sportsman overall 100%. Anyway. And there's so many lessons or skill sets from other games that you can apply to rugby.
Yeah.
I would say that.
Top stuff. Well, look, man, we'll wrap it up. But one thing I always ask my guests before we wrap it up is just, what are you grateful for?
Three things. Yeah, man. Three things every night. Well, I'm grateful to be on the pod. We've been working together for a while and you finally invited me on, so thank you for that.
Sound a bit of anger in there.
yeah. No, joking. Grateful for my little dog.
Yeah, Kai.
Kai, little Pomsky. Yeah, he's you know, I'm a father now. So, I'm grateful for him, and I am grateful for, ending on that subject, family and loved ones, Hannah, mum, dad,
love it,
sisters, brothers, for family as well.
Love that, man. Well, I'm grateful for you coming on today, working with you, even just your journey, man, me being a part of it and seeing, the highs and lows and seeing behind the scenes as well, and just seeing your growth over this year. Your growth has been exceptional, man, regardless, the start of the year, the hardships that you had last year to make a World Cup, not many people would have done that regarding what you went through before it, calf tear, hamstring, pec tear, rest. No one knows about all of these things in the back, so I'm grateful for that, man, and grateful to be here today and doing what you do. So thank you.
Thank you, man. I'm going to have some more Welsh cakes now. So.